540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. In India, the death toll has climbed to nearly 300, with 900 people injured after two passenger trains collided with a stationary freight train. India's railway minister, speaking through an interpreter, says an investigation has been ordered.
A high-level committee has been announced and it will hold an inquiry into this whole incident. The Rail Safety Commissioner will also hold an inquiry in order to find out the root cause of this incident.
President Biden will sign the debt ceiling bill into law today. The bill freezes domestic spending. Many Republicans complained it didn't go far enough. But as CBS's Nancy Cordes reports,
when you hold spending steady, which is essentially what is going to happen over the next couple of years when it comes to domestic spending, you have to remember that if inflation is at 4 or 5%, that really represents a cut.
The Pentagon has spent millions of dollars on a now-canceled program designed to replace the much-maligned defense travel system.
After spending tens of millions of dollars of a $374 million single-source contract to build and implement the new program called My Travel, it's been canceled. Officials aren't saying why they made the cancellation decision.
That's CBS's Christopher Cruz. Troubling findings in an investigation into the death of a child who was in the custody of Border Patrol.
The 8-year-old girl died May 17th. U.S. Customs says the Honduran parents shared her medical history with officials a week before that. She had a chronic heart condition and rare blood disorder. She had a seizure and died on her 9th day in custody. The Border Patrol's Office of Professional Responsibility found a nurse practitioner did not review that medical history the day she died and denied several requests for an ambulance made by the girl's mother.
That's CBS's Steve Kathan. Parents are angry about a school assembly in North Hollywood. CBS's Jeff Nguyen has that story.
School board member Jackie Goldberg says she checked with the group and found only a few had children enrolled at Sadakoy.
They did not have the right to make people afraid to be a child in this district because you're gay, but that's their goal.
Some parents expressed concern about the reading of a book that included LGBTQ content. Officials in Davenport, Iowa say three people are still missing and feared dead after the partial collapse of an apartment building.
For the city of Davenport, I'm speechless.
A message from Nancy Fraser. She's Daniel Preen's only daughter, and Preen is believed to be in the rubble of the collapsed building. Nancy says she knew nothing about the tragedy until Thursday, almost 5 days after it happened.
I was praying it was a mistake. I was praying it wasn't him.
This is CBS News.
Hiring's a lot easier with Indeed. Their powerful platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
You're listening to a radio station that's part of the Civic Media Network. Find more at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The Wisconsin legislature is working on a number of bills aimed at addressing the state's worker shortage. As Mike Moen reports, some groups are calling on Governor Evers to veto bills they say would make it harder on people struggling to get by.
Organizations from around the state want the governor to veto a bill that would require Badger Care recipients to renew their health coverage twice as often. Another veto request involves a measure that would limit unemployment benefits. William Park Sutherland of the policy group Kids Forward argues these plans unfairly target people who rely on these forms of assistance. He adds that 7 out of 10 Medicaid recipients are already employed.
And so if state policymakers want to support workers, they need to address the real factors that make it difficult and sometimes impossible for workers to take more hours and to get and keep better jobs.
He says expanding childcare access would be a big help. Business groups who support some of these bills say they would be more effective in addressing worker shortages. And GOP legislators point to a non-binding referendum from the April election that saw Wisconsin voters agree with the idea of work requirements for certain public benefits. But skeptics like Park Sutherland point out there are already checks and balances for many public assistance programs. He feels this is an attempt to avoid empowering low-income workers who aren't getting the necessary benefits from their employers.
They don't want to pay their workers fair wages and offer life-saving benefits.
And he adds that most people enrolled in Wisconsin's public assistance programs are white, but restrictions disproportionately affect people of color. In the last legislative session, similar bills were advanced by the Republican-led legislature and were subsequently vetoed by Evers. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
And you're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold, 1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003. 125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football. You're about to find out. Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Civic Media promised you something big to celebrate our new and still growing network of radio stations. When we announced the one-day million-dollar advertising giveaway for Wisconsin businesses, you responded.
Just wanted to echo your sentiments about the advertising. That's really a cool deal and really remarkable.
$1 million of free advertising. Now, if you missed this chance to work with our team, go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. One of our local sales pros will get right back to you. Civicmedia.us and sponsorship.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. You don't know me, but I'm your brother. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. This is Morning Cannolis, and it's also Saturday, June 3rd, 2023. Thank you so much for joining me on this beautiful morning here in Waukesha and throughout the state of Wisconsin. It is a special morning, a special broadcast here on Morning Cannolis. This is our 50th broadcast, the 50th time through the auspices of Civic Media. We've come into your homes, your businesses, your cars, your public areas. Thrilled to be still on the air talking with you about the important news stories of the day. This is our weekly review, our analysis, our discussion of those important events, those important circumstances, those stories in what, in law, in government, and in the aspiration for justice in America. We do this every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 o'clock. Delighted once again to have you with us. And by us, I mean not just me, but also my wonderfully professional and always engaging producer, Anya, who is with me here at the studios of WAUK here in Waukesha. Through Civic Media, in recent weeks and months, we have been broadcasting not only here at WAUK in Waukesha, listening audiences throughout this area, but also to WMDX in Madison, WXCO in Wausau, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, WRCE in Richland Center, WLAK in Amory, WISS in Oshkosh, and WGBW in Green Bay, throughout the state of Wisconsin, through Civic Media, bringing you our weekly discussion again about law, government, and the aspiration for justice in America. This morning, celebrating our 1 year on the air, always delighted, as in past weeks, to have your phone calls. Always delighted to take your comments, your questions, your objections, your perspectives on things that we talk about in these areas. That phone number, as you know well, is 844-967-2789. Once again, 844-967-2789. And although this is our 50th special broadcast, a couple of wrinkles, a couple of new things being introduced this morning, which we will talk about. As always, our syllabus this morning is ambitious, but hopefully achievable throughout this hour and next hour. Hopefully also educational and maybe even on occasion inspiring to do important things in our lives and our livelihoods. And we always ask, as we address these questions related to the news stories of our lives, three important questions, three important inquiries. We ask, what happened? What do we know with certainty? Important to focus on the facts, not speculation, but what we know with certainty. Also acknowledging, of course, along the way, when we do not know things, when we are not prepared to discuss those things that are not yet known in the public domain, and lots of what we talk about necessarily involves investigations, both civil and criminal. We don't know a lot of things, Eventually we do, but we adhere to the notion that facts are important and that as a part of one of our first questions, we always ask, what do we know? What do we know for certain? What do we know about the world in which we live? Second, why are those facts important? Why are they relevant? Why are they material to understanding the way in which we live our lives here in the United States, right here in the state of Wisconsin? Why are those things significant to us? Why should we care? And third, what do we do about them? We can't always do something about everything that happens in our lives, and certainly in these areas of government and law and justice. But there are many times in which there can be a response. There can be an appropriate reaction. What do we do in terms of answers to those things, those questions that we raise here on Morning Cannolis this morning? Again, our 50th show, our one-year anniversary, no exception to that past agenda. Also, no exception to soliciting your comments, your questions, calling into us to chat about these important issues. We do have, as always, a very aggressive, a very chock-full syllabus this morning. Let me tell you a little bit about what we're going to be chatting about this hour and then next. In past broadcasts, we have initiated a new segment called Undiscovered Justice, identifying those times, those circumstances, those events where things have happened sort of under the radar, not on the top headlines of our newspapers and even in our news feeds. A couple of stories this week on this 50th broadcast about property, about territory, about land, real estate. Undiscovered Justice, things going on to promote justice in America. One of them having to do with our indigenous populations and some lands in New Mexico. Another having to do with some properties, some coal properties in West Virginia. We're going to talk about Undiscovered Justice right at the top of our show this morning in this first hour. And then we're going to talk, of course, as we often do, about matters related to January 6th, matters related to Mar-a-Lago. Lots of stories this past week involving our former vice president, involving our former president, and discussing not only the status, again, of what we know about some of those investigations, some disclosures made just this past week that affect the pursuit of those investigations, or in one case, the decision not to pursue them. Also, big news this past week. And then also talking about a pending case in New York. We've talked about that a lot before, and a judge and an attempt to get him off that case. We're going to chat about that also in this first hour. Then we're going to be initiating a new segment today called Rule of Law in Snapshots. We spend a lot of time talking here on Morning Cannolis about the in-depth issues, the specifics of cases often, specifics of events, why they're relevant to the rule of law. I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about four different matters, many of them following up on stories that we have talked about in the past, to talk about four of those in snapshots, not spending a huge amount of time on them, but updating you and describing once again the reason why it's important to remain current on the stories that we have talked about in previous broadcasts. Rule of law in snapshots, and then, as you know well, if you have been listening with us, and I suspect that you have for a long period of time, we're going to be spending a good deal of time, mostly in our second hour, talking about, yes, the United States Supreme Court. We are in that time in the United States of America when our Supreme Court is issuing decisions every single week that are very significant. We have talked about many of those in the past. This past week, a couple of additional Supreme Court decisions that may not be at the top of the list in terms of earth-shaking matters, but significant when it comes to labor, significant when it comes to false claims and prosecutions of those people or those companies that may or may not be making false claims to the government. We're talking about those cases and then recap just a bit some of the cases that we have talked about before in the areas of water pollution and internet liability and intellectual property. All things already decided. Looking forward to spending much of the month of June talking with you about these other major cases that the Supreme Court is going to be issuing almost certainly on several days, many days in this month of June as we go into the 4th of July holiday. This is that time of year when our United States Supreme Court begins to clear its docket, if you will, and finally issues those cases, about 60 different matters pending before the United States Supreme Court in this 2022-2023 term. And yes, they're already beginning to stockpile cases for the next term that begins in October of this year. We won't get to that today. We'll talk about those cases down the road. But today, again, a focus on the Supreme Court, past and present, and those things it's deciding in these moments in our lives. Let's talk first this morning. Let's talk some undiscovered undiscovered justice, some undiscovered things that are out there, accessible to all of us, some good news, if you will, in terms of the promotion of the rule of law. Let's talk, first of all, about this major event happening this past week involving a Native American cultural site. The administration of President Joseph Biden took some very major action just yesterday, just Friday, to block some new oil and gas leasing opportunities and options on some federal lands that surround something called the Chaco Canyon in New Mexico. It's one of the nation's oldest and most culturally significant Native American sites. We know well that for the first time in our history, we have a Native American Interior Secretary, the Department of Interior, headed up by a woman named Deb Haaland, H-A-A-L-A-N-D. And she, once again, the first time we've had an incumbent in that all-important spot who is of Native American heritage. Deb Haaland announced, Secretary Haaland announced this past week that her agency would be withdrawing public lands, taking off the market, if you will, within a 10-mile radius of this Chaco Canyon and the area around it. It's known generally as the Chaco Culture National Historic Park. And she's taking those lands off from access to new oil and gas leasing for, yes, that's right, 20 years, for two decades. And that follows, of course, a pledge that she has made previously, a pledge that this administration has made previously to do just that, protecting this area from drilling, ensuring that future generations, not just of Native Americans, but all of us, have access to this important history about the lands that we now call America, the lands that are still indigenous lands, and in many cases owned by virtue of treaties and by virtue, most importantly, of heritage and history by our Native American populations. The move announced by Secretary Haaland this past week will not affect some existing oil and gas leases on land or drilling on private property within the 10-mile radius, but it does once again carve out this major area, this major Chaco Canyon area. This plan in particular is intended to underscore the government's general commitment to focus on Native American issues and expand, as we have seen in other situations, the conservation of our public lands, again, for our future generations. A very important thing, a commitment not only that this administration has made, but other administrations of both Republican presidents and Democratic presidents to preserve our lands. Undiscovered justice in many ways. There's no doubt that this particular canyon park, it's an area about 30,000 acres in what is called the High Desert Mesas of northwest New Mexico. It was established way back in 1907. Who was president then? It was President Theodore Roosevelt, a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It is home to this vast network of pre-Columbian ruins, and that's why this is so very important historically for our nation and the history of those peoples who've lived in this property on this land before the United States was here. Between the 9th and the 13th century, get this, the area was a center of Pueblo culture. It had multiple settlements of multi-story houses, the kinds of things we have seen not only there in the actual site, but also, of course, in images, paintings, renditions of what we believed that civilization looked like in the past. Sacred sites on this property as well. For the past decade or so, Pueblo and some other Native American groups there have worried that the oil and gas projects were threatening the park, threatening the heritage, threatening the legitimacy, the continued legitimacy of all of these kinds of things established way back in 1907, again, attempting to commemorate and to preserve history that goes back long before that. Today marks an important step in fulfilling this administration's commitments to Indian country. That's what the secretary said, protecting Chaco Canyon, the sacred place that holds deep meaning for the indigenous peoples whose ancestors have called this place home since time immemorial. That's what our Secretary of Interior said at the time. Right after the break, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about what this administration has also done in this general area. Undiscovered justice this morning on Morning Cannolis to begin our two-hour discussion of the rule of law, government, and the way in which we are placed inside all of these issues here in the United States of America and here in this great state of Wisconsin. Thank you for joining me. Stay with me for this important discussion this hour and next.
Hi, this is Lindsay Kynard at 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK The Shaw. Here are upcoming events happening in the area.
Milwaukee's very own Downtown Dining Week starts on Thursday, featuring multi-course lunch and dinner specials. You can learn more by visiting downtowndiningmke.com. Friday Night Live in Waukesha begins this Friday from 6:30 till 9. Enjoy live music on various stages throughout downtown. Sendik's Family Fun Day is this Saturday from 1 till 3 in Market Square at the corners of Brookfield. Enjoy a day of family fun for everyone. And if you're looking for a patio party, join Motor Bar and Restaurant. They kick off their summer season with some music and food and beverage specials. Call 414-287-2778 for more details.
If you have an event you'd like us to share, let me know. Email me, Lindsay Kiner, at info@civicmedia.us.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly sunny skies this afternoon with a high of 88. Winds out of the northeast, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Partly cloudy skies tonight. Lows dip down to about 59. Sunny skies and calm tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 80. Low 80s Monday. Much cooler on Tuesday with highs in the low 70s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 72 degrees.
Sometimes the truth hurts, but in a good way.
That's all you had to say.
This is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
We are back this morning on our Morning Cannolis broadcast, talking once again about the rule of law, the administration of justice in America and the state of Wisconsin, and your role, our role, in making all of that work. Beginning our broadcast this morning by a special invocation of our sometimes segment called Undiscovered Justice, and talking about the fact that the administration, the present administration, has banned drilling around this major Native American cultural site called the Chaco Canyon in New Mexico, discussing in particular the reason for doing that, to preserve not only the history of that from the past, but also for the future. A park that was established way back by President Theodore Roosevelt way back in 1907 at the time of the announcement of this ban for 20 years from new oil and gas leasing on this very important place of heritage for our Native American populations. The Bureau of Land Management director, her name is Tracy Stone Manning, said this. She said, "The exceptional landscape in the greater Chaco region has profound cultural importance. Today's announcement, again, this ban on oil and gas leasing in that area, marks an important step in ensuring indigenous voices help inform the management of our public lands." Yes, indeed. A significant thing that our government can and should do to ensure that we all have access to these beautiful sites, these important sites that underscore once again the history of this property, this real estate, this land, which we now call America, which our Native American populations still have claim to by virtue of the fact that many, if not all of them, are sovereign nations inside our nation. We know as well that the Supreme Court has wrestled with this issue of the involvement of our Native American populations historically, the significance of treaties entered into by our Congress, by our former presidents, and the establishment of a sense of inclusion and shared vision among our Native American populations, among all Americans for the future. That advanced significantly this past week by the declaration that at least for 20 years, this particular site in New Mexico will not be spoiled, will be accessible for Native Americans and for all Americans to revel in our history and their history in this important part of our nation. A second story also revolving around land and the involvement of the United States Department of Justice, your government, in preserving it for the future. This one's a little bit more grisly, not quite as celebratory, because it just involves lawyers, it involves courts, and involves fines, the imposition of fines for entities that have not, in fact, preserved our natural resources. Just this past week, the Justice Department, the U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland, announcing a lawsuit on Wednesday against a major coal empire. Some companies there are seeking $5 million in unpaid civil penalties and fees. The principal defendant in this case, among others, is the son of the present governor. His name is West Virginia Governor Jim Justice. His son runs the family's coal operations, and along with him, there are more than a dozen companies that own and operate these companies in West Virginia. The companies, according to the Justice Department, again, this is an allegation in a civil complaint filed just this past week, repeatedly violated federal laws that oversee coal mine operations. What do they say in particular in this civil complaint filed once again by your government? Said over a five-year period, the defendants in this particular case, again, a civil matter, including the son of the present governor and other defendants involved in the coal companies there, these defendants engaged in over 130 violations of federal law, posing health and safety risks to the public and the environment. That was the statement made by Christopher Kavanaugh, who is the present U.S. attorney for the Western District of Virginia, appointed by this president, confirmed by the United States Senate. And that's the statement that he made at the time that his office filed in the federal district court, not the state court, the federal court in West Virginia, this major civil action to enforce the environmental laws and to seek the imposition of penalties for the failure to abide by the conditions, the terms of those laws. The U.S. attorney went on to say, after given notice, these defendants failed to remedy the violations that were identified and were ordered over 50 times to cease mining activities until their violations were abated or reduced, basically. Said today, the filing of this complaint continues the process of holding these parties accountable for jeopardizing the health and the safety of the public and of our environment. Very significant case, once again, under the headlines, if you will, undiscovered justice, significant, plainly. The filing of a civil complaint does not mean that there is the imposition of a judgment yet. That's what trials are all about. That's what pretrial proceedings are all about. That's what the entry of a judgment ultimately would be by a federal district court, whether or not the allegations are sustained, maintained by evidence. By evidence that is credible and reliable in the federal court. But again, this past week, efforts by your government to preserve in West Virginia and in New Mexico these important lands for the future of our nation, our future generations, all of that, undiscovered justice, now discovered justice here on Morning Cannolis. Thank you once again for joining me here in the studios of WAUK and throughout the state of Wisconsin, all of the broadcast areas of Civic Media. Delighted to have you with me and with my producer, Anya. We, as always, taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789 here on this special 50th broadcast of Morning Cannolis, entering into our second year of broadcasting here on Civic Media. Looking very much forward to that. Looking forward to your continued participation, your listening, your involvement in our discussion about the rule of law, justice in America, and the pursuit of the ways in which we can all become involved in our government to make our nation, our state, better places in which to live, in which to work, in which to raise families, and to reside generally. Let's move on, as we always do, to some significant issues, some significant developments in the rule of law, in the area of justice this past week. Again, some of these, if not all of these issues, involving the United States Department of Justice and its investigations involving both the former president, the current president, and a former vice president. Let's begin with that story. We know well that since the summer of last year, actually even before then, the United States Department of Justice has been looking at whether or not the former president, Donald Trump, was involved in taking documents from the White House, arguably some classified documents as well, contrary to law. When we come back, we're going to tell you more about that and the updates not only to that individual investigation, but a significant matter involving the status of the current investigation of the present president, Joe Biden, and most significantly, the big news of this past week, a decision by the Department of Justice about whether to continue a similar investigation of Mike Pence, our former vice president, again, involving allegations of the acquisition, the taking, the maintenance of documents. Stay with us for that important news here on Morning Cannolis.
On air,
online,
on your smart speaker,
and on the Civic Media app.
Give us time. Soon we'll be broadcasting directly to your brain. This is The Shaw.
CBS News Brief. In India, the death toll is nearly 300 after two passenger trains collided with a stationary freight train.
More than 200 ambulances attended the scene and more than 100 additional doctors were mobilized. They worked through the night to try to rescue those trapped inside the carriages and get them to nearby hospitals.
The BBC's Vincent McAvini. President Biden will sign the debt ceiling bill today. Here's CBS's Nancy Cordes.
The reality is that both sides knew that they had to get this done, and they knew when they had to get it done, because the X date that the Treasury Secretary set, she said that that would be this coming Monday.
The X date is when the U.S. could have defaulted. New details in the death of a child in the custody of Customs and Border Protection.
A CBP investigation found that on the day 8-year-old Anadith Reyes Alvarez died, the nurse treating her denied multiple requests by the girl's mother for an ambulance to be called.
CBS's Omar Villafranco. CBS News Brief.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matinaire. Here's what you need to know. No money for broadband expansion in Wisconsin after Republican lawmakers cut $750 million from Governor Evers' proposed budget. Instead, they say the state will wait for more federal money. Under the Federal Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act signed by President Biden, Wisconsin is expecting between $700 million and $1.1 billion to expand broadband. New smartphone technology might be making it easier for people to accidentally call 911. The new feature on some iPhones and Androids allows you to call 911 by repeatedly pushing the side button or just holding it down for a few seconds. If that happens, sheriff's officials say people should stay on the line and talk to the dispatcher to clarify whether it's an actual emergency. The Brewers lost to the Blue Jays Thursday. They're in Cincinnati today. I'm Jane Matinaire. This is Civic Media News.
Do you love getting rewards when you shop? Then shop Knucklehead CBD and Vapes with the Knuckleheads Club. Every $10 spent gets you closer to 25% off. No matter what you buy, make sure you buy Knuckleheads. Stop in Saturday and Sunday and get 15% off Wellness and Wellness Plus, including Delta 8, THCP, CBD, and more, while getting points towards your next purchase. Knucklehead CBD and Vapes, your one-stop smoke shop, located at 520 State Street in Madison. No matter what you buy, make sure you buy Knuckleheads.
If you're grilling this weekend, be sure to have plenty of Village Hearth buns on hand. Fancy equipment and secret sauces are great, but once you've mastered the basics, it's all about the bun. Your perfectly grilled burgers and hot dogs deserve the best, and with several varieties to choose from, including unsliced old-fashioned, classic white or wheat, country potato, and mini sliders, the bakers of Village Hearth have the buns your family will love. Village Hearth buns, locally baked and delivered fresh daily.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yes!
So much waiting for me. Yeah, I wanna go outside. I wanna be.
We're here.
Whoa, that was fast.
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Please, delighted to have you with me here on this beautiful morning here in the state of Wisconsin, Saturday, January 3rd, 2003, as a part of our regular Saturday morning review of the significant stories, events, circumstances, stories out there in connection with the rule of law, justice, and the administration of justice in America, talking right now about major news involving our former Vice President Mike Pence, and backing into that story by providing once again the background to it. Right before the break, talking about the fact that the U.S. Department of Justice has for a number of months, coming up on almost a year, if not longer, been reviewing, determining whether or not there is any basis for charging people, perhaps including our former president, with violations of law related to the taking, the acquisition, operation, the maintenance, maybe even the use, the demonstration, the sharing of classified and other documents at his location in Mar-a-Lago, maybe other places as well. That investigation continues to go on under the auspices, the oversight, the supervision of Jack Smith, who is the special counsel appointed, again, the federal government in our U.S. Department of Justice by the Attorney General Merrick Garland. He continues to pursue that particular matter as to the former president, and there's a second matter also involving a current president. His name, of course, is Joseph Biden. In the wake of the appointment of Jack Smith by the Attorney General to investigate, to determine whether or not there's a basis for any charges on the so-called Mar-a-Lago documents case with respect to the former president, the Attorney General then, upon the identification of like documents, perhaps not specifically the same number in numbers or in content and quality, but the discovery by our current president that while he was not in office after the time that he was the vice president, he had both at his home in Delaware and at an office in Washington, D.C., some materials that also should not have been in his possession, his acquisition there in the wake of his leaving office. And unlike the former president, the current president cooperated fully in identifying those documents, inviting the FBI in to take a look at what he has had, searching those properties to determine whether or not there are any documents that he should not have in his possession. In the wake of those events, the Attorney General also appointed a special counsel to investigate and determine whether there's any basis to pursue charges in connection with the Biden aspects of this same kind of thing. The Attorney General appointed an individual named Robert Hur, H-U-R. Mr. Hur is the former U.S. attorney in the District of Maryland. He was a part of the Department of Justice under the prior administration. He was appointed by Donald Trump in the administration that preceded this one. And Mr. Hur, as a part of his assignment by the present attorney general, determining whether or not, again, there's any basis for assessing, any basis for finding that there were any violations of the law in connection with Joseph Biden's acquisition, his taking, his maintenance of documents at these locations in Washington, D.C. That matter also continues, even as the matter with respect to the former president, Donald Trump, continues. The big news this past week in the wake of all of that history of the past several months is related to the former Vice President Mike Pence. Now, you may recall well that in the wake of the discoveries, this identification of documents in the possession of our former president, Donald Trump, our current president, former Vice President Joseph Biden, Mike Pence, on his own, called upon his attorneys and said, you know what, I would like you to take a look, determine at my home in Indiana whether I have any similar documents that I should not have, that I inadvertently, perhaps like Joe Biden as well, perhaps not like Donald Trump, given recent statements, which we'll get to, if he had inadvertently taken those documents, called upon his own attorneys to do some searching, some investigating. And sure enough, those attorneys did identify a small number of materials in the boxes that were sort of swept up, inadvertently collected at the time that the former vice president, again, this is Mike Pence, left office under the Trump administration, took those boxes, including some of those materials, with him back to his home in Indiana, called upon his attorneys to identify those. They did. They produced those, again, a small number of documents, nowhere near the number of documents identified already, according to most reporting, out of the Mar-a-Lago location, nowhere near the number of documents there. In the same category, if you will, as the Biden investigation, no purposeful, intentional taking of classified documents. But he identifies this as an issue, no indication of obstruction of justice, dissemination of any of these documents to anyone by the former vice president. And sure enough, this past week, in a statement, a public statement by the Attorney General of the United States of America, the Department of Justice advised the former Vice President Mike Pence that it is not going to be pursuing any criminal charges related to the discovery of any classified documents at his Indiana home. That in a letter delivered by the Attorney General, by the Department of Justice, to those attorneys who represent the former Vice President in this matter, perhaps other other matters as well. No criminal charges, no charges at all related to the discovery of those classified documents at his Indiana home. A significant decision for a couple of reasons. One is, of course, it does close out this singular aspect of this whole document issue. The special counsels, again, Robert Hur, with respect to the present president, and Jack Smith, with respect to the former president, those investigations continue. We do not have any charges, any announcements of an official nature coming out of those investigations. But the Department of Justice in this matter, again, in this matter, there was no special counsel appointed, appropriately, no special counsel appointed, principally because until perhaps next week, Mr. Pence has not been an announced candidate for the presidency, fully anticipating that probably in the days just ahead, he may in fact do that, announce his candidacy for the presidency. But this matter did not proceed under the auspices, the oversight or supervision of a special counsel. Instead, attorneys, civil servants of the U.S. Department of Justice reviewing this matter, finding no basis at all to pursue any criminal cases, any charges against our former vice president, Mike Pence, in this case. It is significant also just as a pure procedural, maybe even a civics matter, to understand what's going on here. We have gotten very used here in America to requesting, requiring, almost even demanding that during the course of investigations, we get information about the status of them. And of course, most prosecutors, including Jack Smith, including Robert Hur, including others out there who have been special counsel, special attorneys appointed by the Department of Justice to investigate these things, have, for the most part, declined to talk about the investigations. That is appropriate. That is the right thing to do. We do not investigate these matters in the public domain, pursue them through a grand jury, pursue them through processes involving interviews, perhaps with the FBI, other agents of the federal government. We do not do this in the public domain, certainly not through the media. And most often, when cases are closed, whether it's by a U.S. attorney, by someone at the Department of Justice, by the Attorney General, others, similarly, closed without any identification of criminal culpability, no charges being issued by a grand jury, no charges being proposed to a grand jury for indictment. Most often, we do not hear about those either. Why? Because that's appropriate not to be disclosing that. Even the fact of a pendency of an investigation may tend to taint the public view of someone. Criminal cases are closed all the time when there is insufficient evidence to show that there has been a finding of a crime. Sometimes there is a belief, perhaps among the prosecutors, among the investigators, that a crime did happen, but there's simply not sufficient evidence, documentary evidence, witnesses coming forward. And for that reason, too, it's closed. And very often, it turns out that during the course of an investigation, what's an investigation for? It's to investigate, right? It's to find out whether or not a crime was committed. If a crime was not committed, there is no basis to go ahead with charges. And I would offer that that's what's happening in this case. Most often, for cases that are not in the public domain, that do not get the kind of attention that this particular matter and others have gotten by virtue of the fact that Mike Pence is our former vice president, those cases are closed without any announcement by the U.S. Department of Justice, by prosecutors, by agencies. And that's appropriate. We do not, once again, to affect the reputation, the credibility of people out there who may have been under investigation, but whose investigations result in findings of no criminal culpability, or at least at a minimum, a failure to prove enough evidence to support a finding of some criminal involvement. In this case, an exception to that. Why? Because of the public notoriety on this. And there's a public policy inside the Department of Justice that says the Department of Justice, the Attorney General, can, in his or her discretion, announce something that is in the public domain about which Americans rightly have an interest in knowing. Legitimacy about a former vice president's conduct in this case would fall inside that exception to the rule. And so an announcement this past week, again, that's not normal, not usual, but this announcement that the former vice president did not engage in any criminal conduct with respect to the documents in his home. That, again, appropriate. Why? Because there is public attention to this matter, public notoriety to it. And the reason for doing that is to ensure the citizenry of our nation, that our government is acting competently, that it is attentive to these investigations, and that it will resolve them, hopefully in a fairly expeditious way, but based upon the merits. I would offer that that's exactly what's happened here. An announcement, once again, that that particular matter involving simply
the Vice President Pence, not involving the present President Joe Biden, not involving the former President Donald Trump. Those matters still under investigation. But this one now closed, the file done, and the Department of Justice presumably moving on to other things in its broad ambit. And speaking about those very important things, and speaking about the documents case, let's talk about some reporting of just this past week that goes to this issue of intent. As my comments this morning and in other circumstances have reflected, one of the things that the government, by the prosecutors, Department of Justice, assistant U.S. attorneys always have to show, first to a grand jury that has to determine whether or not there is probable cause to believe that a crime has been committed, and second, then, to a trial jury, sometimes called a petit jury, have to show what in a criminal case? In any criminal case, has to show that there is intent. The defendant has to have had the knowledge, the purpose, the mindset, if you will, sometimes called the scienter, S-C-I-E-N-T-E-R. That's the sort of legal term for it, the mens rea, to use the Latin version of this, the intent to do the crime. And if you don't have the intent to do it, if you simply engage in some negligent act, if you goofed, made a mistake, that may in fact be the focus of a civil action, but it doesn't support criminal prosecution. So one of the things that the government always looks at, I used to look at as an assistant U.S. attorney, as a U.S. attorney at Maine Justice and also here in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, always try to determine during the course of any investigation, violent crime, white-collar matters, including matters involving documents, what is the intent? What did the defendant, the target of the investigation, intend to do? Was this a mistake of the sort that, again, effectively was announced by the Department of Justice this past week in finding that, yes, Mike Pence had those documents, but did that inadvertently? That was a mistake, all right? Not a criminal matter for prosecution. The question is always whether there is that intent out there to take those documents, to maintain them, perhaps to show them around with a purposeful intent to violate the law. And that, undeniably, is the focus of at least the investigation being pursued by Jack Smith as to the Mar-a-Lago documents. And this past week, once again, some significant news coming out of that investigation. Again, not certain, but probably reliable based upon some of the appropriate reporting being given to us in the public domain. Again, we know Jack Smith looking at this determination, this question about whether or not Donald Trump maintained, took these documents, used them in some way, and specifically, what was his intent in doing so? Is this a Mike Pence situation where he simply inadvertently took them to Mar-a-Lago? Probably not. Probably not, given the number of documents, the nature of them, the sheer volume of them, other things we have found out. This past week, some additional information coming out through the media with some reliability that federal prosecutors, again, investigating this handling of classified material, actually have a recording of Donald Trump way back in 2021. He at the time was apparently discussing some sensitive military document that he had kept, that he had maintained after leaving the White House, and two people who briefed some of the media on this provided some reliable information about this. In that recording, again, a taped recording of the former president, Mr. Trump apparently suggested that he knew the document was secret and that he had not declassified it, and that for that reason, a great revelation about intent. And, of course, the existence of that recording could undermine Mr. Trump's repeated claim that he had already declassified material or that maybe he didn't even understand the significance of it. When we come back, we're going to talk more about that purpose of intent in investigations and discuss why this particular revelation is so important as this document matter with respect to Mar-a-Lago and the former president continues. Stay with us here on Morning Cannolis for that discussion.
It's June Dairy Month, and though more than 5 million people call Wisconsin home, we share our state with close to 1.5 million cows. Those beautiful animals. Yes, okay, I grew up on a dairy farm outside of Green Bay. They've been here since before we became a state. Can you answer this? Most of our cow's milk currently makes which product? Is it butter, cheese, or ice cream? The answer coming up. Wisconsin's first official milk plant, 1894 in the Waupun area. area of Fond du Lac County. Fast forward more than 120 years, now farmer-owned with a second location in the Outagamie County village of Black Creek, the Saputo plant is even featured on History Channel's Modern Marvels for its award-winning cheesemaking. So did you guess? Most of her cow's milk, 90% of it currently makes cheese. Gouda for you. Join us in thanking our farmers by celebrating June Dairy Month. For the Civic Media Network, I'm Terry Barr.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
Matt Rothschild of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign.
So here we have Jim Troupas, Dan Kelly, we got Michael Gableman, and the question is accountability, democracy, freedom. Are we going to let these forces who are hostile to democracy continue to try to take over our state? They may spout the value of freedom, but they don't want freedom.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Weekday afternoons 2 until 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly sunny this afternoon with daytime highs approaching 88. Northeast winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Lows level off around 59. Tonight, partly cloudy skies. Daytime highs approaching 80. Tomorrow, ample sunshine expected. Partly cloudy Monday with a high of 82. 73 Tuesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 72 degrees.
You can't handle the truth.
And taking names in the process. This is The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM. WAUK.
We are back here in Morning Cannolis. Thank you for continuing to join me in our discussion about news related to law, government, and justice in America, chatting in our previous segment about this revelation through the media, probably reliable, that Jack Smith, who is now investigating the former president, his name is Donald Trump, for his acquisition, his taking, his maintenance, perhaps even his using, maybe even his transfer of some of these documents to other people, apparently has a recording way back in 2021, during which the former president at that time as well, he's discussing this military document that he has in his possession. The recording apparently made during a meeting that Donald Trump had in January and July of 2021 with people helping his former chief of staff, that individual, of course, named Mark Meadows. He's writing a memoir of his 10 months in the White House, according to the people who are giving this evidence. The meeting was apparently held at Donald Trump's club in Bedminster, New Jersey, one of his many locations on the East Coast there. And he spends a lot of summer times there. And until now, as I said before, the focus of this investigation has been largely on this material found at Mar-a-Lago, his private club, his residence in Florida, rather than in New Jersey. Here we've got this site in Bedminster, New Jersey, where this conversation apparently happened, according to reporting on this particular conversation, an admission, an acknowledgement by the former president at the time that he's got this document, that it's secret in some way, that it does, in fact, fall into the category of a sensitive military document, that he has it in a way that he should not have it. On the recording, apparently, Donald Trump also was railing against his handpicked chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. You may recall his name is General Mark Milley, described in media accounts at the time as having guarded against Donald Trump's striking Iran in the final days of the presidency. Again, a lot of this reporting coming out of this matter relating to the disclosure through the grand jury process, presumably, to Jack Smith of this recording. The recording apparently obtained by the Department of Justice in recent months. Why is it important? Again, it's got to be a key piece in determining whether or not this was inadvertent, whether the acquisition, the maintenance of these documents by the former president was inadvertent, or whether he had the intent to do it. Why is this significant? We don't know exactly what the president said, but if indeed he reveled in the acquisition, the holding, even the brandishing of this document, that goes to his intent, right? He knows he shouldn't have it. He knows the nature of it is a secret military document. And it supports the notion that if indeed Jack Smith and the grand jury that he has convened in Washington, D.C. is looking at this issue of intent under the criminal law to determine whether or not there should be charges against the former president, perhaps others as well, this goes to that issue and certainly supports that conclusion that he knew what he was doing and that he knew that what he was having in his hand, his discussion of it, the sensitive nature of it, all of that goes to his intent, a critical element, again, in determining whether an indictment will be issued and ultimately whether there would be a conviction if indeed indictment, if it comes out of a grand jury, whether a conviction by a trial or petit jury can also be had. That will be the principal focus of any documents case, regardless of how it is charged, how broadly it is defined, what the scope of that may be. This significant news, again, it's probably a small piece of what Jack Smith has been investigating for a very long time now, but nonetheless, it underscores the importance of the criminal process and probably his necessary focus on, now that he knows what the documents were, where they were located, although there is some indication after this report that the special counsel does not, in fact, have the document itself, perhaps indicating that there are more documents out there. Even in the midst of all of that, it reflects upon the status of that investigation, that Jack Smith plainly now looking at this all-important issue of intent. Jack Smith also looking at broadly things related to the 2020 election, right? That's the second major assignment being given to him by the Attorney General, to look at things related to this attempt to overthrow the government, if you will, on January 6th of 2020, to undermine the appropriate findings of the Congress by the Vice President, by the Speaker of the House, that in fact Joe Biden won the presidential vote in 2020, opening those electoral votes and finding that Joe Biden didn't have enough electoral votes to take the presidency. The 2020 election, also a part of a separate but probably somewhat related investigation, also being pursued by Jack Smith inside the Department of Justice. Well, this past week, again, some additional information coming about subpoenas that were issued by the special counsel scrutinizing the dismissal of a person named Christopher Krebs. Christopher Krebs, his name, you may recall him. He was the one who contradicted openly and overtly these baseless claims by the former president, Donald Trump, that the 2020 election was marred by fraud. And in particular, Krebs at the time had said there's no evidence that any voting system deleted or lost votes, changed votes, or was in any way compromised. And again, that statement made by Mr. Krebs, a part of the government at the time. He was the top cybersecurity official during the 2020 election. And of course, that Krebs assessment that the election was secure was at odds with what Donald Trump was saying about the fraud, as he described it, on the American people. It's plain that Jack Smith is now also seeking information about how White House officials, including the Presidential Personnel Office, approached the Department of Justice, looking at this Krebs matter, looking at other ways in which intent may in fact be established. The investigators, again, probably focusing on Donald Trump's state of mind, his intent, his mens rea, his scienter, as I said, around the firing of Mr. Krebs, which he did. Why did he do that? Why did he get rid of Mr. Krebs, who said these things that, again, were contrary to his position? Well, we probably know why he did that. He was doing it because Krebs was articulating a position that was contrary to what Donald Trump was saying to the world about the legitimacy or illegitimacy of the election at that time. So we know he fired him, that is, Donald Trump fired Krebs to get rid of him, as he has done with other people. But it also goes to the question of intent. If you're firing someone who is indeed articulating a position different from yours about the 2020 election, what does that say about your intent? Well, it says a couple things. It says that plainly this person is telling you there is no fraud here. There's nothing to be seen here, nothing about the election, the Electoral College that is subject to disbelief based upon fraud. And it goes to this issue about what you knew and what you didn't know. In this case, an attempt after that to fire someone who is articulating something contrary to what your own view about the world may be, contrary to what you probably know in the end is the truth, which is the 2020 election was not, in fact, stolen. Again, this pursuit of matters related to the circumstances under which Krebs was fired is another part. This Christopher Krebs fellow is another part of this investigation being pursued by the special counsel to determine what was in the former president's mind at the time. Again, another important issue coming out of this investigation this past week, all related to the pursuit of justice. We'll see what happens probably this summer into the fall, whether all of this related to intent, documents, the 2020 election, results in a series of federal indictments, federal charges against the former president. president, perhaps against others as well. That is also going to be the subject, plainly, of our discussion here on Morning Cannolis. Stay with us for our next hour as we pursue the pursuit of justice here in America, in the state of Wisconsin, law and government in our state and throughout our nation.
The summer heat can really get to you. Hot, sticky, you feel like you're melting. But Wauwatosa, coming in July, it'll be easy to cool off at Joy Ice Cream Social. This family-run, family-friendly business is more than just ice cream. It's a cool community hangout spot for friends and family.
Let's talk about the ice cream.
16 delicious rotating flavors direct from the chocolate shop in Madison.
The perfect way to stay sweet and cool this summer.
Opening in July, Joy Ice Cream Social. Scoop, snack, shop. 8334 West North Avenue. Follow them on Facebook and Instagram.
Hey, this is Lindsay Kindert at 540 WAUK The Shaw. At Civic Media, we love our local communities and want to share your stories. Submit your local event and we'll let our listeners know. Email me, Lindsay Kinert, at info@civicmedia.us. That's info@civicmedia.us.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Top U.S. Kids presents What to...